Welcome back. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. Here's Montana Republican Senator David Daines last week on the Senate floor as his party struggled to repeal the Affordable Care Act.
Some call it government-run health care. Some call it single-payer health care. Some call it Medicare for all. But in essence, it's socialized medicine.
Now, Daines dared Democrats to vote for single-payer health care during that debate. None of them took the bait, but that's not because a lot of them don't like the idea. Single-payer used to be a fantasy of the leftists in Congress. Bernie Sanders always has been into it. But a new Pew poll out last month found that 6 in 10 Americans now support the idea. Listen to Democratic Senator and possible future presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren.
So if we're talking about tearing down the healthcare system and starting over, then I think every option needs to be on the table, and single payer sure ought to be at the top of the list.
You can hear Elizabeth Warren through the cameras there. Single payer ought to be at the top of the list, she says. And some Democrats now look at wages and the economy, and they think it's time to bring this maligned idea of socialized medicine from the political fringes to the center. Adam Gaffney is a physician and instructor at Harvard Medical School. He serves on the board of directors of Physicians for a National Health Program. He supports single-payer health care, and he joins me now. Adam Gaffney says there are a few reasons why many Democrats see the idea as more realistic than they have in the past.
First of all, somewhat paradoxically, the resistance against Trump care has really activated the citizenry and made people think about health care, I think, to some extent in a new way. We saw activism from coast to coast. We saw people calling into their senators and their congressmen. We saw people marching in the Capitol. And really, I think there's been a moral framing about health care that has emerged from the debate over Trump care. The idea that health care is a right, I think, has become actually only strengthened by the successful resistance against the Obamacare repeal.
Still, an idealism and a passion for Medicare for all or for single payer is one thing. Liberals are operating, of course, in an environment with a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and the White House, but more importantly, an environment where Democrats have lost 1,000 seats in legislatures across the 50 states. It's nice to have the passion, but it doesn't look like the kind of environment where this is real.
Well, I would agree with you. The political odds are against the movement at the moment, the way the balance of power is currently is. That being said, things change, and that is going to change. And support among Democrats for Medicare for All is rising. We now see that more than half of House Democrats have signed on to a single-payer bill. And then in the general population, even putting aside, as you said, liberals, in the general population, support for single-payer is also rising. Kaiser Family Foundation polls show that support was at 40% for single-payer in the late 1990s. Now a majority of the nation supports single payer. So I think this is going to be an issue that Democrats won't be able to turn away from in coming years. In fact, I think it's going to be very difficult to be a Democratic politician and not sign on to Medicare for All.
Well, that's important because we've seen an election, of course, where Senator Bernie Sanders gave Hillary Clinton a very tough time in the primary. We all know that. But they sort of each represent these two different minds of healthcare when it comes to Democrats. And now in the post-election world, players like Elizabeth Warren has said she's for single payer. Kamala Harris of California is for it. And there seems to be an effort now among high-profile Democrats to move this idea toward the center of the party.
That's exactly right. I think it is really becoming a policy position that's going to be difficult for Democrats who want to be successful to not get behind. You know, I think another factor that's important to point out here is also just the facts on the ground in terms of the healthcare system. You know, the Affordable Care Act, which has survived, did many good things, covered 20 million more people, but it has still left the main problems of the U.S. healthcare system in place. And as long as that's the case, this isn't going away. The two biggest ones are really uninsurance. 28.6 million people remained uninsured in 2016. And then an underinsurance, the seemingly inexorable rise of deductibles. And as copayments and deductibles go up, people can't necessarily afford to go to the doctor, to the hospital, fill an asthma medication prescription, or what have you. And as long as uninsurance and underinsurance remain pernicious problems in the U.S. healthcare system, we're not going to see the fight for universal healthcare fade anytime soon.
It also seems like those parts of the healthcare system that you're talking about, Doctor, are one conversation in a broader economic moment. in the United States. I mean, wages have been stagnant. We know that. Rising healthcare costs, even the future of work, where the rise of artificial intelligence has a lot of people warning that there will be fewer jobs out there. And that means fewer people can get their health coverage through work, all seems to be contributing, it seems to me, to a grander sense that people's healthcare security is going to be at risk in the future even more than it is now.
I would agree. I think that the movement for universal health care is one movement that's part of a much larger movement towards more justice in economic spheres and in social spheres. And the other thing I think that's really going to continue to push this forward and keep Medicare for All in center stage is that in many respects, it's really the only option left.
Let's talk about the other big reality of single-payer health care. How big would the tax increase be to pay for it?
First of all, we are talking about replacing current healthcare spending. So even if your taxes go up somewhat under a single payer, if your premiums disappear and your deductibles disappear, you may or very likely will come out ahead. And that is a critical point that we're going to hammer over and over and over again, because your overall well-being will improve under single payer, in my opinion, despite the fact that there will be new taxes to pay for it. I'm not going to give a number, a tax number right now, because it's still very much under debate. It's still very much under discussion. But the broader issue here is that we're already spending so much more than other countries with single payer systems. And so there's no reason that we can't, at the very least, spend no more in terms of overall healthcare spending. And we're going to divide the costs of healthcare more fairly, less when you're sick, less when you need to go to the doctor, and more on people with higher incomes who can afford to contribute more to the system.
There is a political party in this country that has a lot of control that exists pretty much for one reason, and it's to cut taxes, not raise them.
You know, that party may be shooting itself in its foot as we speak. Let's be honest, politics change. And when the discourse around an issue shifts entirely, you can have a change in the overall political paradigm. I think we're already seeing that. I think that Americans could certainly get behind a program that gives universal health care, covers everybody. People never have to worry about dealing with medical bills ever again. Those are really popular ideas, and I think that they'd be willing to accept a tax increase in order to pay for it.
Dr. Adam Gaffney, physician and instructor at Harvard Medical School and on the board of Physicians for a National Health Program. Dr. Gaffney, thank you.
It was a real pleasure.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.